Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network on Tour. We are broadcasting live from Feast, Portland. I'm Andrew Friedman of Andrew Talks to Chefs. And before we kick things off, we'd like to once again thank Travel Portland, Stream, PDX, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage of Feast possible. And I'm now joined, we're changing things up a little, by the way. This is our first interview of the day that we are doing with the Airstream door open for some fresh air.
I feel lucky.
You should feel lucky because it was getting a little warm.
Yeah.
The sun has found the Airstream. I am here with Greg Denton. Welcome.
Thank you.
Greg is an actual local chef here in Portland. And Greg and his wife, who was going to be here but is not, but I spent so much time practicing her name.
I'm sorry.
That I want to get it right.
You can do it.
You're going to tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
Gabrielle. That's
good.
Easy.
Yeah.
Quinones.
No.
No. No.
Almost. It's Quinones.
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 That's how she trained me.
Quinones.
Quinones.
Denton.
Okay. Yeah.
Gabrielle Quinones Denton. Okay. Gabby, wherever you are, we're thinking of you. Had a last minute conflict, so it's, yep. I don't want to say just, so it's Greg and I. And Greg and Gabrielle are the chef owners of Ox Restaurant and also of Bistro Agnes. Big smile and nod from you as I say those two restaurants.
Yeah, I'm very happy with them.
First of all, what's it like going from one to two?
It's exciting and it's scary and more, it's, well, the way we did it too is we put out a book at the same time as we opened the second restaurant,
right.
And it was originally called the Bistro Agnes was originally called Superbite Restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small plates concept, and we put out our cookbook, which was Around the Fire, which came out a couple years ago, and we had all these tour events, as you are very familiar with.
Yeah, well, you and I were together at Worlds of Flavor in Napa. We've seen each other on the circuit.
Yep, and our shared friend Evan Sung did the photos for that book, and it was a lot, and we probably planned it pretty poorly. It's one of those things that sometimes these opportunities come up, whether it be a space or, and this space came up, and if we're going to do it, we had to do it, and so we said yes to the space.
I think civilians would be shocked to learn how often the restaurant timeline, you know, like the moment of conception, is a real estate deal.
Absolutely.
That is probably the most frequent thing. When you ask these sort of lofty creative questions, where did the idea for some? More often than not, it was what might look good in this space that a broker just brought me.
It's true. And I feel like a lot of chefs have a few ideas in their chamber. And you may get an opportunity and you say, okay, well, I think this may be the perfect spot for this. And we tried a small plates concept and it didn't feel like it was working in that spot. And so another thing we had in our chamber was a classic French bistro. And we pivoted from that and did this classic French bistro for lunch, for dinner, 7 days a week. And it is beyond, it's so busy. It's people are loving it. It's just fitting.
It's great.
It's fitting the space. And as much as Superbite was a passion project and it was something that we really wanted to, you know, let our freak flag fly and all those things, I think part of the reason that we all are chefs is that we want to give people what, you know, we're hospitable. I want to give Portland a classic French bistro in the downtown area where we are. And I think you know, there's other French restaurants in town, but I think this is, people are really very happy about what we're doing there.
Did it feel at all counterintuitive to you to do something like that? You know, it seemed, you know, you come to this city. I mean, I've had great Mexican food since I've been here for not even 48 hours. I've had some great Mexican food. I've had some Vietnamese food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of sort of single subject food businesses here, you know, that do one thing or variations on a theme.
Yep.
And in the middle of that, to throw in a, you know, French bistro, right?
Yep.
I mean, France, at least on the on the East Coast especially, is, you know, traditional French is having a moment right now.
Yeah.
But I don't think about that moment as being something I associate with the Pacific Northwest. Did it feel like counter-programming when you guys did it? Was there a call for it? Were you hearing, like, from guests that they were sort of would love something like that?
Not so much. Not so much like people saying, oh, you should change to a classic French bistro. It just was... The downtown Portland area is growing. It's growing. In the next 5 years, it may not even look the same. There's, I think, I'm going to say there's at least 6 high rises that are going up in the next 5 years. And when I say high rise, I mean really tall buildings with office space and apartment complexes. And it's really growing. And so we realized that we needed to be open for lunch. And so that was the kind of the catapult that sent us to, well, what's a super bite lunch, you know? And then it was small plates, and it didn't make sense. So that's what could this space be, and then what's missing in this spot? You know, there's a couple French, and there's Little Bird Bistro, which is down closer to Burnside and closer to the bridge, and then there's St. Jack Restaurant, which is in the Northwest. But both of those restaurants are, they tend towards classic French bistro, but they have a creative outlet to them. And we very, very intentionally did, like, our creativity comes from our research in classic dishes. And that's, that, like, how do we make things really, really classic and really, really traditional and not really go outside the box too much, you know, not with, like, creative plates and just really classic dishes.
Not with the recipe, right?
No.
But, you know, it is interesting to me. It's one of my favorite conversations about the old days, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was with a chef in New York named Michael LaMonaco. People may know Michael from television. But, you know, Michael said to me that when he was coming up, and it was just classic French, mm-hmm. right? Like in the early 80s.
Yep.
And I said, well, was that satisfying to you? And he had been a musician, right? And an actor.
Yep.
And he said, well, you know, it's like being a musician or an actor in that you may be playing Hamlet or you may be on the piano playing a Mozart piece, right? But even though you're playing those notes, even though you're reading those lines, what you do with them makes it yours.
Yes.
So there is, you know, how long a ride do you give the cheese on the French onion soup? You know, like, how well done does that cheese get?
Right.
How much garlic goes in a dish that has garlic?
Absolutely.
How, right?
Yep. And it's...
And so there is room for your own stamp.
Absolutely.
On something that is 100... Is super classic.
Is super classic. And also there's... You... It's something that I've been trained in, and I wanted to share this because everybody wants to work with the exciting big Asian flavors. They want modern Asian, like they're just like, they want to play with that. And I think to be able to create a real, like a really deep, rich braise and to really develop a sauce with reduction, and then you veal stock one, veal stock two, which is a rewetting, then you combine them both and then you reduce it down, then you've strained it about 12 times between then, and then what's that finished sauce?
Yeah.
And that you don't actually see quite often around here because it's hard.
Yeah.
It takes a long time, and that's why I'm pretty dedicated to it. I'm there at, like, sometimes at 4 a.m, you know, just
time to make the donuts.
Time to make the donuts. Yeah. No, it's true.
So
anyway.
So let's talk for a minute about, well, first of all, I want to talk about this dinner you guys are involved in.
Sure.
But you come from my neck of the woods. Well, you come from New York State.
New York State, Schenectady.
Schenectady.
Yep.
You spent time in Vermont.
Yep.
You know, I hadn't been out here in almost 20 years to Seattle or Portland. And when I woke up here yesterday, I was so happy, you know. What made you want to move here? What brought you out here?
Well, so we were actually in Maui, Hawaii before we were here.
Okay.
And Maui, Hawaii is beautiful, but it's one season. It's always sunny. It's always warm. It's always beautiful, which some people are, of course,
mm-hmm.
You're an idiot. Why do you want to come to the Pacific Northwest?
No, I get it. I'm the same as you. That's why I never moved to LA.
But we came out here in November to visit because, you know, we were thinking about leaving the islands, and is it going to be New Hampshire? Is it going to be Vermont? Is it going to be Maine? Is it going to be Seattle? Or is it going to be Northern California, and then Portland about 10 or 11 years ago started really getting some notice.
Had been getting it for a while,
but really,
but then it like
really ramped
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it just like yeah,
yeah, and we were like, wow, this is a cool little place. And we came and we ate. It was so cold. It was rainy, but we happened upon a beer festival. We ate great mussels. We had some great French food. No surprise, because we love bistro fare. We just enjoyed it.
It's very welcoming, isn't it? That's how I feel about both.
It's very European too, in a certain respect. It's got that little bit of feel, and we love the fact that an hour away there's a coast, an hour away there's a mountain that I can ski or snowboard at. If I want big city, I can go to Seattle, which is 3 hours away, and then they have like one of the best wine countries, you know, in the world.
Yeah.
Down in the Willamette Valley.
Yeah.
So it was really a perfect fit. So that's why we came here. And then at the time it was cheaper, you know, young cook, it was cheaper with rent, and it was cheaper to, the idea of getting a restaurant in Maui, Hawaii was tough. You had to have millions of dollars. For here, there's, you know, you might be able to start something with $100,000, you know, mismatched silverware, mismatched plateware. It was all cool, but it's, you know, now that's pretty much gone now because it's so popular, but that's what brought us here. And I also love the humidity. The humidity is generally really, really low here when it's not raining, but it's beautiful.
I've always said when it's not raining, well, first of all, when it is raining, it's rarely pouring. Mm-hmm. Winters don't get that harsh. Mm-mm. And when it's not raining, it's freaking spectacular here.
Yeah.
And in the summer, the sun sets at like 9:30. I mean, it's nuts.
Well, coming from the East Coast, I mean, it's cold. Like, it's, you're not, you know.
The East Coast is
cold.
Yeah,
the East Coast is cold. No, like, you're freezing. Like,
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that, like, and I hear you get, yeah.
Here, you.
You get a Carhartt jacket or something.
You're good to go. You might have 4 or 5 days of really cold, just like in the summer. It's just not as long.
Yeah. So, all right, well, talk to me about this dinner that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Nouveau Bistro.
Yes.
As I'm told, it focuses on the link between France and Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Explain.
Well, I think we are having a little bit of a resurgence in French cuisine here. We have, Coquine is going to be there, and she does, you know, French twists and mm-hmm. things like that. She's very well known for her chicken and things like that. So I think for us, we specifically went with the French and the Beaujolais theme. So what we're doing is Portland's kind of known for donuts in a certain respect. You had, you know, the weird donuts mm-hmm. and things. So we're kind of taking a play on that. So we're taking a homemade donut, and we're stuffing it with what would be in and on a croque monsieur, which is Mornay, which is bechamel and cheese, Dijon mustard, smoked ham. And then we're stuffing it inside. We're deep frying the donut. And then on top, we're going to put a Gamay Noir, so a Beaujolais strawberry jelly on it with a nice little bit of black pepper. And then we're doing a ham sugar where we dehydrated ham and we're mixing it with sugar. That's our dish. So you can see it's, you know, France and Portland, and it's, you know, mixed.
That sounds pretty awesome. Yeah. Did you come up with this for the dinner?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. So
you don't have an outlet for it though.
No,
beyond tonight.
No,
right? You can't do it in your.
No,
it's not going to be a plat de jour.
We could. Well, we could. I mean, we could do. We could. We could. If there's some leftover, we could bring back. But most likely not.
Most likely not.
It'll be a one and done.
Do you connect Portland? I'll give the idea away. If somebody takes it, they can have it. But you know, I was having a conversation with a chef. Who I won't name, but pretty well-known chef. And they were asking me what I was going to do next for a book. And I said, well, I'm thinking about doing a book about Brooklyn, contemporary Brooklyn, right? I said, I think that it has a lot in common with, like, the not all of it, but the romance people have around, like, Berkeley in the early 70s, like the whole Chez Panisse, you know, that whole time.
Yeah.
and the, you know, forager starting to be like, I connect a lot of that with what's happening in Brooklyn now, especially with the added layer of, we don't need to get into this, but, you know, all of a sudden now there's a political vibe that mirrors that time. You know, we have protests in the streets, right? Mm-hmm. And all this stuff. And I said this to the chef, and the chef says, no, you should do a book called Hipster Food. And you should do Brooklyn, Portland, Charleston. I forget the other city she named.
Yeah.
But do you connect, it's a long way of asking this question, mm-hmm. What's happening here, which is palpable. It is palpable what's happening here in food.
Yeah.
You just walked, first of all, I don't know how any, this is not news here, but how a city of this size can sustain the number of coffee businesses is makes no sense to me.
Right.
It makes no sense to me. But, you know, the food trucks.
Yeah.
The restaurants, large and small, ambitious and modest.
Mm-hmm.
There is such a culture of food happening here. Does it feel to you like it's connected in some way with the other places I named or with a larger thing that's happening right now? Or does it feel really specific to Portland for you as a chef and a diner in the thick of it?
Yeah, I think it...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree. I would say that it is a bit connected, I think. If you look, so like Austin would be probably
Austin might have been the one, yeah,
one there,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
So it's the small city attached to the big city, right?
Right.
It's Brooklyn attached to Manhattan. It's Austin attached to Dallas. It's Portland attached to Seattle.
Interesting.
Like it's the little jerk little brother that just wants to prove that he's good and better. And but for me, I'm serious about food. I'm serious about what we do. I don't, I guess sometimes I care about too much about what people think. Just like every other chef,
yeah,
you're
sure.
sensitive about certain things, but I feel like the people are really pushing themselves here, but yeah, I would say that there is a connection between
That's
all
so
the
interesting.
Cities.
I never thought of the little brother thing.
Yeah.
I mean, what I think of is this sort of, you mentioned it, the lower barrier to entry.
Right.
Which comes with being, but you don't have to be near a big city for that to be true. Mm, you could be an isolated small town. But I associate that, the money piece.
Yep.
You know, a lot of the restaurants are kind of scrappy, which I mean is a compliment.
Yep.
And it also seems to me that there is this sort of very often a DIY element to it.
You
know, people who, a lot of the restaurants in the places we just named, they're not hiring the named designers, which I guess is a function of the, these things are all not necessarily triggered by each other, but I know a lot of people, certainly in Brooklyn, who built their own restaurants.
Absolutely.
You know, and brought in a ringer from home.
Same thing here.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's the same here.
And
a customer base that is unpretentious enough to not mind any of that.
Yeah.
Right. They don't need to go to a place that's, they don't quote unquote fancy or has a certain level of polish on it. If they can sense they're in the hands of a serious front of house and a capable kitchen.
Absolutely.
Right.
They
just want the stuff.
They're OK with a little bit of discomfort, whether that be waiting in line for something.
Sure. Right.
Whether it be not having the right china or mix mac tables and chairs and things like that. So but as a city like Portland grows or a city like Austin grows, there's going to be another city that pops up next to Portland, whether it be a suburb or whether it be, you know, suddenly Tacoma's the next hot place because it's kind of in between. But again, it's because chefs and young people who are in the kitchens, they always are searching. They have to search for cheaper places. So that's where it's always going to be that way, that if you want the next hot place, it's going to be a cheaper place because that's usually where that young person who's got all that ambition, who's got all that drive, who doesn't care about time, and that's where they're going because that's where they can afford.
Mm-hmm.
So keep an eye out for, you know,
the next one.
The next one.
Do you feel like change is inevitable? Like, do you think a city can stay? Like, because that to me is sort of a magic. To me, this will sound corny, but I mean this sincerely. There's sort of an energy. It's the energy of the young cooks, right? Everything you just said. Willing to do it on the cheap, willing to put in blood, sweat, and tears, willing to sleep in their construction site overnight if they have to, right?
Yep.
That is, I feel like you could draw like in an Indiana Jones movie on the map, right? Mm-hmm. You could track like that spirit almost around this country. You know, it's always been somewhere.
Absolutely.
You know, at one point it was in like Soho in New York and the west side of Los Angeles and Berkeley, you know?
Yep.
And then it was in like Miami, mm-hmm. right? Miami had it. Chicago had it.
Yep.
You know, and a little bit still does, but I think it's gotten a little more built up.
Yep.
But I do wonder if when you have that, you can stay there
mm-hmm.
because it does draw people.
Yeah.
You know, probably one of the reasons, you know, one of the biggest things I see in real estate listings is proximity to cool restaurants, right?
Oh.
Like you mentioned the skyscrapers that are going up. That's probably in part due to the food scene here.
Real estate, people in real estate should give a lot of credit to young chefs because someone like myself who opened up a restaurant in not the best part of town, like Ox, suddenly
you become an anchor.
You're an anchor.
Yeah.
The walking score goes up. As soon as that walking score goes up, then, you know, the whole food comes in and then, you know, it really is like that. But unfortunately what's happening though is that as a young chef, I'm really happy where I'm at now because we're established, but trying to be established now is really hard because of just, it's, you know, you got young chefs and you got to, you know, there's none of that old school mentality anymore. Everyone is, you know, it's hard to find good cooks, unfortunately, now.
It seems to be a nationwide, maybe a worldwide epidemic, but
it's tough. And I'm not, we can get into it all day, but I'm not going to.
It used to be the opposite.
Yep.
It used to be that you, like, if you had a good restaurant, you could have all the cooks you wanted. Now there's so many restaurants that there's not enough cooks out there.
Yeah.
The best line I ever heard was, I can't say who it was, but a friend of mine said, my sous chef should be line cooks and my line cooks should be prep cooks.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that pessimistic note,
yeah.
Greg, we've been referring to this like speed dating. We're going, you know, we only have about 25 minutes per visitor.
It's all good.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
This is our first actual interview. I hope I'll get to have you guys on my full-length podcast sometime.
I would be more than happy to do it anytime.
Yeah, next time we're in the same city, we'll do that.
We will. All right, thank you.
Okay, and have a great time with dinner tonight.
We will.
Okay.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks so much. Oh, and before we sign off. I'm sorry, I need to thank once again Travel Portland, Stream PDX, and our engineer Aaron Parecki, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage of Feast possible. And we'll be back on the air soon with another host and another guest, so please stick around.